Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Tine.
And I'm Bonnie North. The new novel by Milwaukee native Mark Wisniewski is told from the point of view of two characters, Jan, an Arkansas native hoping to break into a career as a horse racing jockey, and Deesh, a young African-American man fleeing a crime he was party to in New York City. Their lives you wouldn't expect to intersect.
But finding out how they do intersect is one of the most rewarding aspects of the book, called Watch Me Go, which has gotten critical praise from literary names no less than Salman Rushdie. Wisniewski, who now lives in New York, is back in town to read from the book at Boswell Book Company this evening, but he joined us first in the Lake Effect studio. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Mitch. Good to be here.
What was the spark that got this novel underway for you?
It was teaching and having my students write in journals for creative writing classes. And a couple of students, one in particular, wrote something about horse racing, and then came to me for a conference at the end of the semester and said, I want to tell you this secret I have about the secret sprint, which you've read the book, so you know what I'm talking about. And she said, you should write this because I'm not going to write this. I'm not going to go on to become a writer. I'm going to become a nurse, and I think you should write this. And being the teacher and the writing teacher who had very high principles, I said, well, I can't take a student's idea and turn it into a novel that I write. And that was the end of that conference, but in fact, that's what I did.
Well, the book isn't entirely about the secret sprint, but the secret sprint is a pretty pivotal point in this book. Explain what the secret sprint is to the degree that you don't want to give away.
We don't want to give it away. And again, there, you know, for people who are not quite into horse racing as much as others and the gambling aspect of it, you want to keep – if you have a horse that's a very good horse that you think is going to win a race, you want to try to make sure that the odds are higher so that the payoff will be greater if you wager on the horse. And people work out horses before they actually race them at the track for gambling purposes and official purposes. And if everyone is at the workout and sees that the horse is running really well, in great shape, and it looks like it's just going to get out there and win, then that usually becomes a favorite and the payoff isn't so great. So if you could have a workout wherein the horse could show its stuff, as it were, secretly, and it wasn't reported, it wasn't publicized in the form, nobody saw it, but maybe just a few people, and you could be assured that this horse was ready to run, ready to win, so you could put a little extra on it or maybe put a lot of extra on it with high odds. That would be the ideal for somebody who was sort of trying to game the system. And in fact, this student told me, and when you go to the track, and I grew up going to Arlington Park every August with my family, you know, you hear about things like that and you think about them, and there's always that notion that, oh, these races are rigged or something's going on that we don't know about. And of course, every trainer, every owner knows something about that horse that, you know, all the people in the stands don't know. But anyway, you think about that. But then, in fact, this student came up to me and said, this is true. I actually rode in one of these sprints. They had a little race off in the hills with a little two-horse gate, and it was just two horses running against each other. And that's why they did it. And she said, it's kind of like, I'm here to tell you that this happens and I've been in it and this is what it's like.
Well, and in terms of horse racing and its universe, as far as informing fiction, it seems like a really rich environment to explore, full of twists and turns and metaphors where you might not consider them otherwise.
Plenty of metaphors. From a writing standpoint, that's what I was looking at. And this book is a lot about being an underdog in society. Deesh and Jan, the two narrators, are struggling against broken families, betrayal, the labels that we are burdened with. And
sexism and racism, too.
Sexism and racism, certainly. You know, even more labels than that, I think, within Deesh's peer group. He's sort of the guy who makes sure the friends sort of get along and stay together. Bark, his one buddy, is kind of the boss and kind of the tough guy. And the other guy is sort of the comic relief and the talker. And Deesh is sort of the peacemaker,
yes,
as it were. Right. So that can be a good thing. But these labels that we have and these roles that we play, and you bring up racism and sexism, the fact that he's black, that's a struggle. That can be a burden. And really, Deesh is just trying to love. Jan's just trying to love. And I think everyone out there knows that can be a struggle sometimes when you're up against all that kind of thing. At any rate, the horse racing, you know, obviously there's one favorite in the race and the rest are more or less underdogs. Certainly the 50-1 shot is an underdog. Nobody expects that person to win. And it's labeled as such. And then that horse gets the weakest jockey, as it were, and maybe you know, other aspects. It's just not trained as much going into the race or whatever.
The system is in a way gamed against the underdog.
Against the underdog. And in my view, it's a perfect metaphor for society. And if you're trying to write a novel that's being empathetic and sympathetic with underdogs in society, horse racing seems like a great little portrayal of that.
Well, and at the same time, there's maybe an ancillary metaphor that shows up in both Jan's life and Disha's life, and that's fishing and this idea of the big one always being out there.
Yes. And again, I think it's a little bit of the you never know what's quite going to happen. If you're not going to make your casts, if you're not going to try, you're never going to catch any fish, let alone the big one, the one you really want. You know, the trophy fish, the one if you're into taking your fish home and eating them, the one that could be a nice meal. So you have to try. And again, if you're in a situation where if you don't believe there's a big one out there or you don't give your full effort, you're probably not only not going to get the big one, you're not going to get anything. So you still have to try. You know, each cast is an attempt and each cast is a choice. And I think, again, the novel shows Jan and Deesh both sort of up against it and making choices the best they can and trying to believe in themselves, trying to believe in the ability of others to love them and their ability to succeed despite the odds and keep casting, keep getting that bait out there.
Give us, if you will, we've been sort of talking around it. Give us a thumbnail sketch of where fate has both Deesh and Jan when we meet them as this novel gets underway. Because as you say, they are both protagonists in this story, both narrators in this story, but you tell their stories parallel.
Deesh is imprisoned, falsely accused on Rikers Island, which, as you probably know, is the worst place to be. He's grown up in the Bronx, and you do not want to be imprisoned on Rikers Island. It's a horrible place. He's there because he's falsely accused of three murders. He's black. All three people that he's accused of murdering are white. One is a cop. There was a cop shooting. So he's up against that, and because there is racism, as we see all around us every day, and because of just sort of the bad shake of luck and the way things turned out, the case against him appears pretty strong. Jan has just gone through a summer in upstate New York and has been trying to be a horse racing jockey. And we don't want to give away the ending of the story.
Sure.
She's hit some tragedy at the end of her summer, and she's coming off of that and realizing, though, within that tragedy that there is something there that she's learned, that if she shares it with Deesh, she can get him off the hook for at least one of those murders. So in an odd way, if Jan just didn't tell her story, if Jan just felt sorry for herself and allowed herself, you know, to just mope and cry, because it's a sad ending for Jan. This is a love story gone bad. And if she just kind of let that be and kept that to herself, nothing good would come out of it. And instead she realizes, I can make something good out of this horrible thing that happened to me, but I got to tell my story to this guy. And she's white and he's black. She's from Arkansas. He's from the Bronx. And she's bold enough to go visit him in Rikers Island at the visiting room and say, hey, I can tell the story. I could testify. I could get you out. But she needs to know that he didn't commit the other two murders. So there's kind of a catch there.
Well, and I think, of course, one of the things that makes this novel such a page-turner is trying to figure out how these two lives have intersected. And and again, we don't want to give anything away. But the telling the story through two narrators, was it a challenge to keep either of them from being kind of a cardboard cutout or an archetype?
Yes, yes. The going back and forth, you want to keep their voices sounding different. And, you know, obviously one's male, one's female, one's black, one's white. I mean, there are huge differences that one can dwell on. At the same time, they both have that underdog mentality. They're both kind of lovers. They both want for that
There's
life.
There's a romanticism to them.
Yes, yes. So I wanted to here and there allow that commonality of theirs to come out, because that's sort of the point of the book, really, is that, you know, we all are after these same goals and values, and we go about them maybe differently. So I wanted to show that commonality, but yes, you had to keep them different, and sometimes that was a little difficult to do when you're editing a Deesh section. All of a sudden, well, now I'm going to go and revise this Jan section, and you know, you gotta turn off the one voice in your head and turn on the other one.
Were you able to write it in that linear way? Write a chapter of Jan followed by a chapter of Deesh, or did you have to kind of try to map out each of their stories individually?
It was not that way. I did write a bunch of Dish and a bunch of Jan here and there. It wasn't as if I wrote all of the Dish and then all of the Jan and then interspersed them. It was kind of a mess that was made. But there were surges of Dish narrative that would come out for days and then some Jan.
You mentioned that you grew up going to Arlington Park as you were growing up in this part of the world, and you mentioned the woman in your creative writing class who came in and told you this story. Did you have to spend a lot of time at the track to really kind of portray this Finger Lakes track where so much of this story pivots, at least for Jan, accurately?
I think so. One of the other advantages I had is that when I lived in upstate New York, I had a neighbor who owned and raced horses at Belmont Park and at Aqueduct, and actually at Finger Lakes sometimes, but he kept the horses down in the city. And I'd go down there with him, and I was able to go on the backside, which is where the barns are and where the horses are kept when they're not running, and feed them and hot walk them and just sort of hang out with his trainer and watch the horses being worked out on the track. And I think that aspect was crucial because it's the feel you get. And it's also the mentality and sort of the emotional state of people who are in horse racing. I think they all are romantics. They love horses, number one. They love animals, and they love what horse racing represents. There's beauty there. There's speed. And
they're both romantic and unsavory at the same time.
At the same time. You know, maybe some more of the one than the other. But certainly on the lower levels, which at the Finger Lakes racetrack, we're not talking about the very best horses in the world. We're talking about the cheap claimers, as they're called. And this is not to say these people aren't wonderful saintly people, some of them. But, you know, we're trying to make money. There's organized crime involved. There's wagering involved. You know, people get upset. You know, people trying to make money. So there's scams being pulled, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, and for people who maybe their only view of horse racing comes through the filter of watching Triple Crown races on TV, this is a much different universe than that.
Yes, yes. These horses, the ones that we see at Finger Lakes Racetrack that Jan is interested in, they're not going to the Kentucky Derby. There's always that chance, though. And again, that goes to the whole notion of odds and that whole notion that, you know, you just never know what's going to happen. The American dream, you can start out small and end up big. And we've seen that happen in the Kentucky Derby over the years, that horses that have started out from such modest backgrounds when they're one-year-olds and then their two-year-old season start out on a very small track. And holy cow, look at this thing run. I mean, it happens. It can happen, but it happens rarely.
Well, and again, it speaks to the odds that are stacked up against both Jan and Dish and some of the characters around them who seem to have come to terms with their odds in a different way.
Yes. Everyone's trying their best to make the best choices they can given what they have. Dish's two pals, who he does not end up being around for much of the book, even though he spent his life growing up with them, played basketball with them in high school. You know, had a promising life with all of them, could have been superstars. They won a state championship. You know, violence is what Bark chooses at one point. And again, we don't want to give away what happens in the story. And the other friend chooses to withdraw and to kind of look out for himself early on. So everyone sort of goes their own way. And also on Jan's side, she's living with this horse racing family. And we see everyone in the family not only with how they deal with horse racing, but with how they feel with family issues, handle it in their own manner. Some people are more religious. Some people are more quiet. Some people talk more. And everyone just tries their best. And, you know, sometimes things don't work out. And sometimes there is a sad ending for some people.
Well, and again, we don't want to give anything away, but the sad ending, I think, if there were not a sad ending in some way, I think Jan's character would be written much differently.
Yes, yes. And that was one of the things to keep in mind when I was writing the Jan sections as opposed to the Dish's sections, because as Dish is telling his story to the world and primarily, though, to Jan as they're sitting there on Rikers Island, he's trying to convince her, I didn't do this stuff. This is what I did. He's willing to admit he did X, Y, and Z, but none of these things are crimes, and certainly none of these things are crimes that he's up for. So that's one sort of notion. Jan is mourning something that terrible that's just happened to her, and the trick is you don't want to give that away because you want the reader to to be hit by that powerfully at the end and not know for sure what's going to happen. But I wanted to to be true to it, if this just happened, she's not in the best mood. She's not cracking jokes when she's telling this to Deesh. And she's trying to just tell him a little bit as she's trying to gain trust in him about whether she's going to tell the crucial fact that she knows, which happens to be also very much hand in hand with the horrible thing that she's gone through. So she's sad. She's mourning. And I think sometimes some people early on in the book might be reading and think, why did she go off on this little paragraph? Why was she thinking out loud about people being mean or whatever? And there's a reason that we find out. But it did affect how her narrative came across.
Odds for any particular novel doing better than another particular novel are hard to figure out. But a nice review from Salman Rushdie can't hurt.
Yes, that was a nice event. Salman Rushdie chose the story that the Deesh Strand was based on, which was titled Straight Away, for Best American Short Stories 2008. Therefore, he already knew what the Deesh Strand was about, and so that helped us get that praise from him.
Well, it is well-deserved praise. And Mark Wisniewski, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Mitch.
Milwaukee native Mark Wisniewski's latest novel is called Watch Me Go. He now lives in New York, but he's back in his hometown tonight for a reading at Boswell Book Company.